Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. Tonight's show is live and in living color. Last week, for those of you that may have tuned in, we had a recorded show because we had an urgent community meeting in Terrell County, the county where Muhammad Farms resides. And it was critical to the functioning of Muhammad Farms and the road that leads to Muhammad Farms. If you've gone to Dr. Risley's Facebook page, you will see that there's been some serious issues around the farm. And many of you have been assisting, and we appreciate that. So for update, go to Dr. Risley's Facebook page. And inshallah, when he calls in tonight, he'll give us an update on that. But tonight, we're live. And we're really excited because we have another special show. This show, how many listeners out there, when we come into the nation, we read Message to the Black Man, and we're taught to pool our resources as brothers and sisters to build business and to control our neighborhoods. And so that's one of the things that we're doing at the Time to Leave movement. We're trying to encourage and motivate and assist as much as possible, and to make real prototype example communities. And so that's challenging. It's challenging because a lot of us, though we have the desire and we have the courage to step out and do these things, a lot of us may not have the, what you would call, qualifications or experience to do it efficiently. And that's when we have to humble ourselves and seek out to get help. But as Muslims, we can't just go anywhere to get assistance. we have to vet the assistance we get, because we may be inviting an enemy into our household. So as we have formed the Time to Leave movement and using social media, we make friends. We meet brothers and sisters who support and want to assist us in what we're doing. And one of the people that wanted to help us with this is a brother that I had the pleasure to meet on Facebook and meet in one of our Time to Leave task forces. And the brother is so graciously agreed to be our guest tonight on Time to Leave. Our brother is Brother Leroy K. Muhammad. Brother Leroy K. Muhammad, our brother's in the queue, but before I bring him in, I'm going to read the brother's biography, a brief biography. I'm going to have to make it brief and fast because it's quite extensive in the fields of real estate and investment and in pooling resources. I can't wait to hear what he says about some of his experiences and what he's doing now. We could have a whole show just going down his bio line by line, but I'm going to read it real quick, and I'm going to bring our brother in, and we're going to get on with our topic, which is, by the way, how to plan and organize group real estate investments. Our brother, Brother Leroy K. Muhammad, he's the owner of Property Rehab Central, which is a real estate management and investment services company located in Southfield, Michigan. He is also co-founder of the Fringe City Development Group. His professional background extends across 3 decades. Brother Leroy was born in the Nation of Islam in 1975. His parents, Arlene LX and Leroy 5X, were registered Muslims in Mosque No. 1 under the leadership of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. After the fall of the Nation of Islam, he and his family returned in 1989 to help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan with the rebuilding process. Brother Leroy is very passionate about community building. As a strategic planner, he has worked with various agencies and groups to create development plans in Detroit. Brother Leroy assisted with the creation of Cluster 9 Master Plan submitted to the City of Detroit, as well as the North End Quality of Life Plan. Prior to serving in his current position, Brother Leroy worked with Mr. X Roofing and Construction Company as a project superintendent and a contract procurement specialist for government contracts, including projects with the Detroit Housing Department, with the state of Michigan, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. He's a former member of the Mayor's Office of Community Affairs. He's co-owner of Fringe City Development Group, and it goes on. So I'm going to bring Brother Leroy on. If I miss anything significant, inshallah, he will remind me. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Leroy. Can you hear me?
Alaikum salam, sir. Yes, I can hear you fine.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for being on our show and agreeing to be our guest today, brother.
All praise is due to Allah. It's a pleasure and an honor to be a guest on the show. I'm a big fan of this show, so it's a great honor to be a guest.
Well, praise be to Allah. That's quite a compliment coming from someone with your background. So, Brother Leroy, you know, we got to talk quite a while at length during our task force conversation. And one of the things that's been always on my mind is we are trying to build our own separate communities. And at one point, we are going to have to purchase land. At one point, we're going to have to control land. And if you could just talk about that topic, some of the challenges that we could incur trying to control, and as a real estate investor, controlling doesn't necessarily mean owning. If you can talk about controlling, owning, and some of the challenges that we face in trying to build our own communities.
Yes, sir. Well, I would say number one, you know, kind of to put this into perspective, that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad set an example for the Nation of Islam while he was among us. The Nation of Islam was known for quite an extensive portfolio of properties that we own. I was doing some research online, and I saw that the Nation of Islam had 15,000 acres of farmland. We had our own import of fish from Peru, of whiting. The nation had its own logistics, its own trucking system. We had our own air transport system of our products. So we had accomplished a lot. But what it took was a really strong, united push to make that happen, because there's several challenges that comes with owning property and controlling that property. So one of the things that every developer, you know, whenever you come to the table with a project, one of the first things that any funding agency, any finance company is going to ask you is, do you have site control? In development, that's critical. Do you have control of the site that you're trying to develop? And so that all by itself is a major issue. For us, you know, it's pretty much the basis of doing anything that we want to do. So it is critical that we do have some type of ownership and position on land.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there are many ways to make that happen. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But for people that do own land, that is a very big first step.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And before we get to the next point, I just want to remind our listeners, brothers and sisters, this is it looks like the lines are filling up fast. And if you want to get a chance to ask Brother Leroy a question or give a comment during the show, you want to press that one early so you can get into the queue. And it's first come, first serve. So it's starting to light up. So go ahead and press that one. Even if you don't have your question, you might want to press that one to get in the queue. All right. So, Brother Leroy,
yes,
I want to thank you. You sent me some key points that would be good to discuss in our show. And one of the things you said, you talked about current trends. You talked about current trends in America for reimaging and redeveloping urban access, urban areas. And so what are some of the challenges, you know, that we face, you know, calling on your experience in Detroit, what are some of the challenges? You know, it's black folks there, and properties are depressed, so they're a lot cheaper than they were. And, you know, you got people that got, you know, in the area that got investment funds, so, hey, it should be a walk through the park, right?
Well, I would say this, you know, right now, America is in a very, this country is in a unique position because America went out first and developed its urban areas, its cities. So America was the envy of the world. Everybody came here. You wanted to really have an experience and, you know, and what it felt like to live in the future. You know, the state of the art was the United States. Because of that, America had what's called a built environment. Everything is already up. You know, New York City, L.A., Houston, Seattle, all of these cities are existing. So the buildings are now starting to age. So while that's happening, other countries now, they have their economies are starting to emerge. So in China, in the Middle East, in places like Dubai, and, you know, just the entire Far East, even in South America, those places now are starting to see a surge in development. So now America is losing its footing as being the place where you want to go to exist in the future and what it feels like to live in the most updated scene of a city. So people are traveling outside of the country in order to have that experience. So what's happening in the United States is the cities are starting to scramble to reimagine their cities. They need to reset their cities and they need to update them. So what's been happening all over the country is you see urban planners are coming around trying to reposition themselves. And so you have a lot of new ideas coming in and repurposing of old buildings and turning them into, you know, old maybe factories and old it could be a train depot like it is in Detroit, where they're now starting to create what's called mixed-use projects, which, you know, you see housing in them, apartments and retail spaces and things like that to make those areas more attractive to the people that they want to retain. They don't want the people leaving. They want them to stay in those environments. And so that's happening in the city, and it's interesting because it's given us and the nation an opportunity to see what it's like to rebuild from scratch, which is exactly what's happening in Detroit.
Okay. And one more question before I start to open up the lines. So in terms of to whose benefit this is, who can benefit from the situation the most, who are we up against, and who is able to do the most? For example, we got venture capitalists. you got investment bankers. You got private investors. You got, you know, white folks that, you know, just regular white folks that want to get a bunch of land and turn them into farms, and, you know, and you got nonprofits, and then you got us with our plan. So where do we fit in terms of the competition?
Well, that's a good question, brother. And the reality is we don't fit in. Gentrification has always been an issue, and they found a very nice way to gentrify the communities again. So there is no real plan for what to do with black people in these environments. What they're doing with the poor people, they're really displacing, pushing them all into one area, and they have something in Detroit called NSOs, which are neighborhood service organizations, and this is a place where they just pile up our people on top of each other. It's worse than the projects. And so a lot of people like it. You know, a lot of black people made money in New York because they came in and bought their, you know, their houses or their brownstones in Harlem, and they moved out of those areas, and a lot of them moved down south into Atlanta. But really what they did was they surrendered some of the best geography in the country to the white people that are coming in to take over those neighborhoods. Now, in a sense, that created another opportunity because it gave us an opportunity to now figure out what we're going to do for the people that do have money. We have an opportunity to build our own communities. And so I'm not an advocate for black people being upset because white people are coming in to retake places that they set up for themselves in the first place. All of these cities in America, they didn't set up not one for us. They were all set up for them. And a lot of them, right now, we chase them out of the cities, and they moved and created the suburbs. Now they want the cities back. So it leaves us in a position of trying to figure out what are we going to do next. I listen to a lot of what Dr. Ridgely says about creating communities in our area down south on the farmland, and I think it's a good idea. We just need to know how to come together to make that happen. So there are ways for us to not necessarily try to figure out how to fit into what they're doing. What we may need to look at is how do we take the resources that are coming to us now because they want to buy our position, and how do we take that money and how do we redevelop our own communities? And that can happen in many different ways. It could happen in the cities where we can choose our own geography, where we want to be in our city, and we can build community there, or we can go to where there are no cities and we can start from the land and we can build up from the land. Both of those require their own specific way to go about it, but they're both very good plans of action in the face of what we're seeing as far as people coming in to retake these cities.
Thank you, Brother Leroy. You pretty much set up a good context or a window for us to continue this discussion. And I see that our brother, Dr. Ridgely, is now. I'm going to open his line. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Yes, I'm just listening right now. Please give other people an opportunity. I'll come in later, inshallah.
Yes, sir. I'm going to leave your mic open, Dr. Ridgely, so when you want to, you can put your phone on mute, and when you want to come in, just come on in.
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Okay, so we're going to continue our discussion. Once again, brothers and sisters, if there's anything that you've heard that you want our brother to elaborate on, or something that struck a nerve or sparked an idea, please press that number one. Okay. So one of the things that you put in our discussion points, brothers, is very dear to our hearts too, is the call for separation, the act that lacks the actual mechanism and plan. Okay, we want to separate, but we don't know how. And so you listed some steps. Do you want to just go ahead and explain your position? Explain the premise. You say we want to separate and we don't know how, and we lack a mechanism. I mean, it's just a matter of put some gas in the car and go on, right?
Well, yes, sir, in a sense. I was reading today where someone reminded me of where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was told that he had the hardest job of any man that ever lived. And you would think, you know, you have white people. My family was, and that happened while I was trying to explain to my daughter, because we were watching the movie Rosewood. Well, what happened in back at that point, of course, the Hollywood depiction wasn't completely accurate, but it was enough where she just was on fire. She couldn't understand how could people take that kind of abuse. How could our people take that kind of abuse and stay with the people that were abusing us? You know, anybody from the outside looking in would immediately think it's a no-brainer. If you're being mistreated like that, leave. Go somewhere else. Get out of there. But we don't think like that. So the hardest part in the whole idea of separation is nothing more than the idea of people really embracing the need to separate. And one of the biggest impediments, the biggest obstacle course in the way is we still believe we may be able to work it out with white people. There's a way for us to come to terms and figure this out and make peace and go into, you know, happily ever after with them. We don't get it. It's never going to happen. So that's the biggest challenge.
What if there was a way? Would that be worth pursuing?
I would say that, you know, you would be a fool to pursue it, because we know that the way that this country is set up in specific is not sustainable. One of the biggest problems this country is having is trying to figure out how to stay erect. It's not going to continue, because the foundation of it is it was always unsustainable. And so now that that's coming into manifestation, it's falling. And anybody that tries to, you know, hold on to it is going to go right where it's going, into the ditch or into a pit. So our people need to let this country go one way or the other, you know, and they'll figure that out in the days to come. I think, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was trying to come in, and, you know, most of his work was being done to convince us to let go. So that's number one in terms of what we do. We have to have the desire and the willpower to let go. And that's universal. That's universal. And, you know, I'll say it like this. Even in the nation, we still have to figure that out. We have to figure out how to let go. So I'll move on to number two.
Okay. And we have a caller. We have Sister. Go ahead, brother. Make that point and I'll bring our caller in.
I was going to just go into the second point. The second point was, which is in how we've seen it happen, is a vision is always created. There are people who have the skill to create visions. And so those people, we can identify where we want to go, where we would like to set up our communities, and we need to create a vision for that. But I'll end that point there, if you want to take the call.
Yes, sir, and you reminded me of something just before I get the call. I remember in studying Dianetics, you had three types of people. You had the visionaries, who were the creators. You had the maintainers, you had the starters, and the maintainers and the stoppers. And so you need all three, and to be successful. And we just have to know where we are. So I'm going to go ahead and bring our caller in, Sister Ann. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Ann.
Wa alaikum salam. Yes, sir. Just commenting on your last point, Brother Carlton. You know, I have to wonder, do we really need all three of those? But if all three will make for a successful outcome, then I guess we'll have to accept that. But one of the things I wanted to comment on, Brother Leroy, you mentioned your young daughter, after watching Rosewood, made the comment of how could our ancestors have just withstood or accepted the kind of treatment that was levied upon them by slave owners.
Yes, ma'am.
But if we look around today, when we look at the number of our black men, young black men, being slaughtered just at will, because now, you know, it's legal for anybody who wants to carry a weapon. And, you know, if they don't like you, I was listening, and to bring it a little closer, earlier this week, or it could have been last week, no, it was last week, one of these big actors in Hollywood, I think his name was Liam Neeson, made a statement that, and he made it publicly, he had a female friend that was supposedly raped by a black man. And he said when he heard that, the first thing he wanted to do is to kill the first black man he came upon. Now, if that's in his mind, how many other minds is that in? And we're living in that on a daily basis. So we are living with the same kind of atrocities being perpetrated on our people. They may not be as overt on a large scale as it was back in servitude slavery, but it's still around. It's still happening. And
yes,
what's been since me is looking at some of the comments from black women. Sometimes during the day, I'll be inside and I'll watch this program, The View, where they have these two black women and around this table. And oh, they could see all kind of reasons to forgive him. You know, he was, at a low point, and now that he's had time to think about what he said and how he felt at that time, you know, well, I think we should just leave it at that. But then I thought about those same women about a month ago. They would not let Kevin Hart host Grammys. They took away the offer of him hosting the Grammys because of some statement he made years ago in his career as a comedian. He made a joke about gay people. Well, all of a sudden, he brings that back up. Well, he apologized, but these same women, I remember looking at it, and now I don't even watch the show anymore, but these same women, black women on this show, well, even though he apologized, he didn't sound really sincere. So I just turned it off right then. I said, what do they want him to do, grovel, get on his knees? But then you turn right around and you say, this white man, he said publicly the first thing he wanted to do was go out and kill the first black man he saw because of what happened to somebody else that he knew.
Right.
So we're living under siege in this country right now. So I don't know what else is going to take for us to realize that and to go ahead and make haste with the efforts that are underway to separate us. Yes, you are doing a great job with the effort in Detroit, because Minister Farrakhan had said Detroit is going to be our new Mecca. So, of course, yes, that is a place we need to be trying to get our people to look at coming and locating to and trying to rebuild there. But also, we've got this farm in Georgia. Georgia is the birthplace of the messenger, and that is why we have this radio program, Time to Lead, because when the minister said at his press conference in D.C., October 15th, about separating. We will either separate or die. Right after that, Dr. Ridgely, you know, got permission to start the Time to Leave dialogue, and we've been going on. Our people are still slow. They're still very slow to seem to want to be serious about separation. And you asked the question, how do we teach ourselves and each other to let go? You know, one of the things we have to do is get the Final Call newspaper. Read what the Muslims want and believe, especially what the Muslims want. This was put there by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And if he said, we want to separate into territories of our own, then to me, that is the first lesson that we need to learn and keep in our minds as to what it's going to take or how we separate. Always have it in the back of your mind that that's one of the things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that we must do in order to be successful as a people. But we seem to be trying to dig our heels in where we are. And like you said, that we can make that place better.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
So, Sister Ann?
Yeah. Yeah.
We got another caller on, and we can go ahead and let Brother Leroy comment, and then we can go ahead and let the other caller come in.
By all means. Yes, sir.
I 100% agree with everything Sister Ann just said. So, and I don't really have anything to add to it beyond the fact that I think that what we're entering into now is an era where, especially with the youth, the minister has said multiple times that he's done talking. And I think that we've sown this field at this point. And the youth, I know for my own children, I have three children and they're all in their 20s, or my daughter is 16. They can't stand any more talking. They just can't take it. If it's not about showing them what we're talking about, they don't have time for it. And I think that we have to now move into the era, even if it's not a lot of people doing it, we have to move into the time of producing. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did that. He showed and he proved what he was talking about, and I think that that's where we need to go with that.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you, Brother Leroy.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to go to our caller. We got a caller. Caller with the last four digits, 4848. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Brother Alvin.
Assalamu alaikum, salam, Brother Alvin.
Alaikum salam, sir.
Yes, sir. I was just thinking about real estate investment. A lot of people are making millions of dollars off of real estate, creating cash flow, and how we could pool money together to start doing that type of thing, you know. So it'd be like an individual thing trying to come together and be like a group operation.
Yes, sir. Well, that was one of the things that I think that we were going to discuss, and the idea is...
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, that's actually one of the topics that I was hoping that we get to before the end of the show, the different investment platforms and ways believers can come together to invest. Is that what you had in mind, Brother Alvin?
Yes, sir, because a lot of people making millions of dollars off of real estate, buying and selling, leasing or whatever, you know, especially, I guess, maybe like Detroit, you know, a lot of people buying property up there, rebuilding. If we own property, you can sell it to those people and you know, reap the benefits of it.
That's right. Brother Carlton, if I can jump in.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm waiting for you. Go ahead, brother. I interrupted you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. Brother Alvin, I would say, yeah, there are people doing it, and there are Muslims included in that number that know how to come in and buy properties and renovate them and either sell them or put, you know, get cash flow going on them. And every believer should be involved in that at one level or another. So the best way to do it, you know, a lot of people don't know how to jump in, but it's not that difficult. The best way is to find, if you don't have the means as an individual, the best thing to do is to find other believers with like mind. They don't have to have an exact replica of your mind, but somebody that's relatively like mind and to have the same desire. What people do is they form these real estate investment clubs. And what that is a very informal thing. You know, you get together, you know, at a coffee shop or at your house or, you know, wherever, and you all get together and make a decision about how you want to get into buying properties. The best way to do it is to start off small and grow your way up. So most investors, my clients, what I do is if they're new, I try to give them what's called a low-hanging fruit. I give them something that's easy to do in the beginning. So it depends on where you are in the country. Every real estate market is a little different. So we're talking about, like, let's talk about Georgia for a minute. The whole Georgia real estate market is not too dissimilar from what's happening in Detroit. There are areas that are depressed areas, and the real estate buy-in cost is low. You don't always have to come with cash to buy a property. You can come in with a portion of the money, and then you can use other people's funding, whether it's individuals, what's called private lenders, or you can actually, you know, find different sources that will loan you money if you have what's called skin in the game. Skin in the game means you have some of the money on your own. You come together with that group. You all figure out what kind of project you want to do. So if the project is you want to buy a property, fix it up, and put a tenant in it and gain income over time, that's what you do. If you want to buy a property, fix it up, and then sell it, which is called flipping, you can do that too. And both of those ways are good ways to make money. The buy and hold is a good way to build wealth. And this is one of the things that we need to do in order to control land. So if you bought a property with a group, you allowed some whether it's a bank, it could be a bank, it could be a private lender, it could be a hard money lender. Some type of lender can put up the money for the repairs if it's needed. And then you can hire a property manager, someone in the area that will manage the property for you if you don't have the experience as a landlord. Or you can do it yourself, and you can manage the property yourself. And after the first property is on board and it starts producing an income, you can leverage that property and you can do another one until you build up a good portfolio of properties. It's not that difficult. I mean, really, to start it off, you need a real estate agent and you need a contractor. Those are the two team members that you need, and you can be off and running.
Brother Alvin?
Yes, sir. Sounds like something we need to be trying to do.
So if I understood you correctly, go ahead, brother.
No, I'm just saying it's hard to do it just off working a job or, you know, small scale, you know, by yourself unless you got plenty of money. I mean, is there been a millionaires in the nation that can, you know, anybody know?
How many millionaires?
Yes.
It's quite a few. They just don't make them make themselves known. But they're around, you know.
Yes,
they're around.
So it's like you said to me. Yeah, I say, brother Leo, it sounds like what you're saying to me. Before you get the property, make your team first. Find your people first.
That's right. That's exactly what you do. You build your team first. You don't, you know, go out and do anything. You build your team. Your team is your partners in the deal, and the team is your professional team, so your real estate agent, your contractor. Those are the two main team members that you need. Somebody that's going to look for the properties for you, and then a contractor you can use before you even buy a property to ask if to go by and take a look and assess what the property needs are, so you'll know exactly what you're getting into. After that, there are plenty of all over the country. There are plenty of people that are offering money to investors. All you have to do is what's called placing a property under contract. Most real estate deals are done where somebody is selling the property and there's a contract. There's a contract to purchase, a purchase agreement. And so before you actually show up with the money to buy it, you sign an agreement to purchase. Normally those purchase agreements, you know, there's something called earnest money. So you put a deposit on the property. That deposit a lot of times could be as low as $500. Typically it's about $1,000 to $2,000 down. So it may be a property for sale for $40,000. Still, the EMD or earnest money deposit would be about $1,000. You give the person $1,000, that transaction would be best done through a real estate agent. You let the real estate agent create the offer, and you give the real estate agent the earnest money. They take your money, and they secure that deal. For all practical purposes, that purchase agreement is a contract that you can now go to a funding source to get funding for. And that's it, and you can be off and running with a deal just that easy. Now, brother brought up millionaires in the nation. The one of the best ways to fund deals now for people that may not have access to capital. You can't go to the bank because your credit is bad. Well, what investors are turning to now is called crowdfunding. So they're actually going online into their social media network and they're raising money up. I think the Nation of Islam started crowdfunding. We've been doing it for a long time where we get pennies, nickels, and dimes from a lot of people to come up with a fund. Well, that's what was happening now. And so even if a deal isn't appealing to an investor like an institutional investor or even hard money lender, you can always put the deal together, secure the deal, and then go after money on a crowdfund platform.
Mm. So these crowdfunding platforms, are these like social media sites online, like something like your Kickstarters and your, what's the other one? Indiegogo?
Yeah, GoFundMe, Kickstarter, right, exactly.
Okay.
Those, and there are thousands of them. And so the mm-hmm. idea is you can pick the platform, you can pick the place where you actually want to create your own fund. And so you basically figure out what you want to do now. A lot of them are donation-based. Some of them are actually like real estate crowdfund, which is the best ones as far as for a real estate deal because they're equity-based. So a person is buying a position on that property with you. So it's technically that person is buying into your deal. They're not just giving you money. They're buying a little piece of that property with you. So what you do is you create this crowdfund platform now, and you can set yourself up or your team up as the managers of the deal. You can also be owners, but you're selling a position to the people that you're raising this money with. And it's a very good way for people that feel kind of left out of the institutional way of lending to get money to do their deals. And I think in the nation it will work out great, you know, because we have a pretty wide network in the Nation of Islam, and there's a lot of people that want to see this happen. They just don't know. One of the things that I noticed, you know, on Facebook is that as soon as a person puts up a post about real estate, a lot of people respond to that. I think we have a pent-up desire to see this happen. You just don't know how
it's
going.
So, do you know of anyone who has successfully implemented this?
yes. But
okay.
Most of the people
okay.
that I know, they don't want to be made public. But I will say this, okay? I can
right,
say this
right.
much. There is a group in Detroit that is buying up properties, and it's 50 to 100 believers in their group. And they all put up a little bit of money, and they've been buying and renovating houses very quietly in Detroit.
Okay.
So, yes, it is working. And
okay.
And then there are other people that are doing it in different levels one way or another. So, yes, it is happening.
Okay, and then taking Brother Alvin's line of questioning a little further. You did say that it's more important to pick your team first and then start to look for properties. So the next question is, what are the best practices in choosing team members or investment club members or co-investors?
I would say, you know, you may have, and that's another good question. There are guidelines with every different jurisdiction as far as what you can even do as far as creating even an investment club, because everybody has to come to the table and know exactly what's going on. Some people make the criterion money. So they'll say, we're all of like mind. Everybody needs to put up $2,000 a piece into this fund. And, you know, you can really kind of make it up. But I would say you want to find people that are committed. If you're going to go into anything with a group of people, you need people to invest like you're investing. So you may not have, everyone may not be able to match one another as far as how much money they can put into a deal, but you may have, someone may have a special skill. Like you may have someone in the group that's a contractor or a handyman. They may have more knowledge of how to look at the properties, and it reduces the cost of having to have a contractor to go look at every property that you're looking to buy. That may be equity that person brings to the deal. So I would say you want to bring people into your team that have something to offer, you know, beyond just passion, but they have something to offer into the deal. And also they have similar goals. I mean, nothing stalls a deal faster than having a team of people that can't ever see eye to eye on anything. That will make the thing never go.
Okay, this
yes,
is Dr. Richard. I want to go back to a statement that Brother Leroy made at the top of the broadcast to get a little bit more clarity. He said that America is not sustainable. Its economy.
Yes.
Could you explain that?
Well, right now, America has lost its position as being the place where everyone is coming to buy merchandise. For one, America is no longer the export king. You know, we're really dependent on other nations to provide us with what our needs are. That problem is compounded by the debt. So those two things I would say are probably the biggest problems. But beyond that, America has also lost its luster as it relates to being the place where people believe that they need to be in order to have the modern experience. So people are choosing to go elsewhere besides the United States to have their new experience as it relates to whatever the state of the art is in the world. So now you go overseas. China is outcompeting America. America is copying China's mass transit systems, architectural design. America is behind. America is behind on infrastructure. America is behind on almost everything. And so people are now starting to look elsewhere, and that's causing America to lose its luster. On top of that, you know, the social discourse. So that would probably be some of the number one reasons that I would say that America is starting to lose out in those areas. I think that,
okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, once again, as a result of that, I think that it's causing that the political strife is creating an opportunity for us, because as a result of that, and this may be going into something else, but as a result of that, the middle class in the United States and a lot of the working class are starting to feel more pressure, and they're starting to feel more anger because they're holding things together, this big burden. A lot of it has something to do with the entitlements, and I believe that the desire for white people is to let us go because they're carrying this burden because America is no longer producing what it needs to even sustain them. So that's pretty much how I'll finish that point.
Okay, in other words, let me capsulize that. In other words, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad warned us in the 60s that America was going to fall. She would not be able to provide jobs for us in the future As a matter of fact, she will not be able to provide the jobs for her own people, her own white people. He warned us about that. Then this man named Ma, who Alibaba, one of the richest people in the world, he made a statement about the development of America over the last 30 years. And he said that for some reason, America decided to export her manufacturing and her service industry. She sent her manufacturing to China and India, well, to China and South America, and her service industry, her computer services industries, to India. He said he couldn't understand why America did that. Now, we as black people in America must understand that when we came to Washington, D.C., 2 million strong, and challenged the beast, the beast said, okay, you can have it, but when I finish with it, you will have nothing. And we have not learned that lesson to make another move. Why did America develop? The secret relationship between blacks and Jews showed us she developed because she had a strategic position in the eye of those who were the developers, in particular, what we call the Jews. The Jews were looking for a place to produce cotton cheap because they had the cotton industry under control in Europe. So she came over here and brought slaves and then brought the finances to produce the plantations to produce the cotton that she used to produce clothes, and she developed that circular, triangular trade with slaves to cotton to clothes to liquor to guns back to slaves and so forth. Now, she has done that, meaning those who developed the economic system in the first place, and now they're moving it to other places. And they got all the money in the world to build what they want to in any place. And since they've got the hearts of the people to believe in what they claim to be progress, the people will follow them wherever they are. We were given a culture by Master Farad Muhammad. We're coming up to Savior's Day. We were given a culture. Food, how to eat to live. Clothing, under the restrictive law, and morals, which would keep us away. The restrictive law will also keep us away from all those vices. We were supposed to love for our brother what we love for ourselves. We were supposed to enjoy being a service to each other. We were supposed to love being a God that produces and not just consumes. But yet, we in the Nation of Islam have fallen into the consumerism attitude of the so-called American Negro middle class. Now, if we want to rebuild Detroit, if we want to build around Muhammad Farms, we must have people who are willing to work, and we must have people who have ideas about what to make that other people will buy. Mr. Farrakhan has said the new educational paradigm will start off with what do the people want and what do they need and what do they want. Now, how do you go about producing and supplying the people's needs and wants? That's, you train your children to be able to answer that question, and you set up the industry. You set up the industry. Mr. Farrakhan has said business is life. Business is not just a part of life. Business is life. We think life is after business. We think life is after work. We think life is the weekend. Life is a nightlife. We don't see producing and serving as life. We see that as drudgery and slavery. And this is why we're in the hell we are in now and can't figure out how to get out because nobody want to go to work. Now, if we come together and we develop communities together, and then we decide together on what we're going to manufacture and what we're going to trade with each other, until we come up with that particular product that the world wants, then we can bring the wealth of the world to us once we have produced that product. Master Farad Muhammad, I believe, is sitting on the wheel, maybe more than one wheel now. I believe he has technology that he's wanting to give us that we can produce and become the masters of the planet Earth. But we do not believe in him, and we are still sticking around thinking that the dead dog is going to get up. This is Savior's Day coming up. Let us go to Savior's Day and let us think about how are we going to make the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's word bond. How are we going to return the favor of Master Farad Muhammad by coming here and giving us the truth so that we can come together and build a heaven on earth? As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam.
Thank you, Dr. Mealy. We are down to the last 3 minutes, and I still have Brother Alvin on the line. Brother Alvin, did we answer your question? Did you have any more things that you want to say or ask before we close your line? Okay. Yes, sir. So, Brother Leroy, we are down to the last 3 minutes, and we covered quite a bit in this show, but the hour goes by really fast. I see some points here that we can have whole shows on. One I'm looking at is rural development strategies and urban redevelopment, how they differ, and the best approach for both. And we still just scratched the surface on investment platforms. You talked about the investment clubs, and that was really important. And we're going to have you, your time permits, on a second show so we can get deeper into this.
That would be wonderful.
Yes, sir.
That would be wonderful. I would love to come in and see if we can continue to build on this subject.
Yes, sir. We're in the closing minutes. Tell us about your business and your personal business and any services that you may be making that may be available to, if possible, if our listeners can support you in any kind of way.
Well, what I do on a daily basis is help real estate investors that are interested in coming into the Detroit real estate market with locating properties. We do property scouting, we do property valuations, and we also help them with purchase of the properties. We have a team, multiple teams of tradespeople that go into the properties and renovate the properties and bring them up to market ready, which either is selling the properties or placing tenants. And then we also handle property management for our clients. So we'll manage the property, we'll place tenants, and handle the daily, day-to-day job of managing the tenant and collecting the rent and sending it off to the owners. So that's pretty much what we do on a daily basis. I'm also a real estate investor myself. So I'm a part of a group of brothers in Detroit that have purchased properties. And right now we're preparing to unveil some of what we have planned for an area around our existing mosque, number one, in Detroit. We're hoping to open up some street retail spaces where we're going to be giving the believers that have micro businesses the opportunity to sell whatever products that they have. We're going to be selling halal food and just a whole lot of stuff to create a sense of place so that believers will start, that are here, will start activating. And that's what I'm doing now.
Praise be to Allah. And how, what is your preferred method of contact if someone listening was interested in utilizing your services in the Detroit area?
Well, I do have a website. It's propertyrehabcentral.com. All of my contact information is on our website. So I would invite anyone to visit our website and take a look and see what we provide as far as services. And if you're interested in doing something in Detroit, give us a call. The telephone number is 313-742-6515.
And if you're not a member of the Facebook group, Time to Leave Facebook group, Brother Leroy is also in that group. Brother Leroy, I want to thank you very much for making time out of your busy schedule to inform us and share your experience and knowledge with us. And we pray that you and your family and your business partners are successful with building that community. And a lot willing, we hope to have you on again sometime in the very near future.
Well, thank you, sir, once again for having me. And I want to give everyone the greetings of Assalamu Alaikum.
Praise be to Allah. Wa alaikum salam.
Won't you have me? Won't you have me understand you?
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground.
Yeah.
Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic.
Mm.
Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Alone.
I never at once felt so alone.
Alone.
I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire.
Down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes.
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. By brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. Instead, cause I set myself on a quest for truth. And he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty.